We're starting for the first time this semester a continuation of the Ramban's commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. We will reintroduce what we're doing here. The Rambam took the same system as did many Rishonim, that before they started their works, they wrote an outline of what they were going to do. So the Rosh, before he wrote his work, wrote the Kitzur Piskei HaTosfos. And the Tur, before he wrote his work, wrote the Kitzur Piskei HaRosh, known as the Ramazim. And the Rambam, before he wrote his work, wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos. And the Rambam says, "Before I want to make sure I cover everything in my Mishneh Torah, so let me first make sure I got all the mitzvos outlined." So based on the Gemara in Makos, where the Gemara says, "Darsh Ravi Samloi, that there are Taryag mitzvos Nemru Yisrael, Am Yisrael has 613 mitzvos." Based on that, so the Rambam's Girsa of that Gemara is Nemru L'Moshe MiSinai. So the Rambam says there are 630 mitzvos from Sinai. Let's figure out what those are. And he writes a Sefer HaMitzvos. He's not the first. He's not the last. And based on that, he's going to write his Mishneh Torah. Now, the Rambam writes, before he is going to enumerate his mitzvos, so he says, I have to tell you the rules. How do you know how to count mitzvos? And we've already discussed the concept that the Marganisa Tova, the commentary here on the Sefer HaMitzvos, points out, that there's really a point that has to be delineated, meaning just because something is a mitzvah, saseh doraisa, just because it's a biblical mitzvah, does not mean it gets counted separately. We know that on Shabbos, there are 39 avos melachos, are 39 prohibited actions. But they don't count as 39 separate mitzvos. The mitzvah of Shabbos is repeated numerous times in the Torah. The mitzvah of Vavta is ager, to love the ger, is repeated numerous times in Torah. That doesn't make it a separate mitzvah. So then the question is, how do you decide what's a separate mitzvah and what not? So the Rambam gives us, I think it's 15 rules, what he calls shoroshim, 15 roots to define what's going to get counted as a separate mitzvah and what not. And the most famous is the second one, which is what we're up to. We're in the middle of the second one, in which the Rambam says that things that are derived from the Yud Gimel Midos, from the 13 laws of derivation, are not counted. Or, later on he says, they are not biblical. They are not doraisa. And so the Rambam is telling us that even though Moshe received the Yud Gimel Midos, Shatora Nidreshes Bahem at Sinai, the things that are derived from the Yud Gimel Midos are not doraisa. So we're given laws of derivation, but what's derived using those laws is not doraisa. Now, before we continue, we should introduce a few more points. The Brisker of once interviewed, I think it was Rav Chaim, and he said to him, who told you this great secret that the key to being a Lamdin, the key to knowing how to learn, is to know the Rambam's introduction to Sefer HaMitzvos well? So what we're doing here in our learning has goals on multiple levels. We fashioned our learning here on Thursday nights around the following goals. The basic goal is to read the Rambam with the Ramban's commentary. The next basic goal is to familiarize ourselves with sugyos all over Shas. And that's why every time we encounter a Gemara, we introduce, what is this concept? I don't know if every Gemara, but many Gemaras. So we've already discussed what was the institution of Netilas Yadayim, and what was the institution of Eruv, and how Eidus testimony works in Gittin. And we've gone through many, many, many concepts, because our goal here is not only to learn the Rambam and Ramban, but also for everyone to become familiar with many, many sugiyot in Shas. And this is where the Kohav Yaakov inhabitants will have to figure out if this year is for them or not, because we spend a lot of time introducing things just so that we're familiar with these concepts or these dinim. Everyone's invited. We'll be happy if this works together, but you'll have to see. So, back to the Rambam and Ramban. The Ramban lived shortly after the Rambam. The Ramban himself was also a doctor. And the Ramban wrote works protecting the Gaonim. Meaning, if you have the Rif, and Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi, the Baal HaMor, wrote a work attacking the Rif, so the Ramban comes in the Melchamos to protect the Rif. If you have the Rambam who wrote his Sefer HaMitzvos, and then he attacks his predecessors, the Baal Halachos Gedolos, Rav Yehuda Igon. So along comes the Ramban to protect the predecessors. And we've already seen that numerous times the Rambam goes on for pages protecting the Gaonim. And when he's done, he says, but really I agree with the Rambam. I just wanted to show you that the Gaonim's opinion is not as far out as the Rambam makes it. So the Ramban is really what we call in Hebrew magamati. He's partial. He has an agenda, right. He's coming to protect the opinion of the Gaonim. But now we're in the middle of a very long section in which the Ramban has been attacking the Rambam from tens of different angles. On this point, how could you say that what's derived from the 13 laws of derivation is not biblical? How could you say such a thing? And he quoted, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 sugyas from all over Shas. And he says, there are so many more, I just don't have time to quote everything. That's after he quoted tens of sugyot. And he's continuing to attack the Rambam. Someone talking to me?
It gets a little confusing because the Ramban switches the sides of each page as you turn the page. Just make sure it says Ramban at the top.
Now, the next point, there are 2 points that the Rambam has said that the Ramban is taking him to task, and that is that anything that comes from the prophets is also drabanan. And this is really divided. The Ramban has been, the Ramban discussed part of his attacks on this in the first Shorash and part of them now. Let's go step by step. We have a concept that appears throughout the Shas. Gemara Gemirila, they had a tradition. Va'ata Yechezkel v'as mecheyakra. Along came the Navi Yechezkel and gave a pasuk to a concept that predated the Yechezkel, a concept that was around from the days of Sinai. Says the Machzor Vitri, Rav Simcha Mivitri, Rashi's Talmud. He says, well, that's why we call Nevi'im Divrei Kabbalah, because anything you're going to find in the Nevi'im, the Navi didn't invent a new Torah concept. The Navi took something that he had, B'Kabbalah, from Moshe Rabbeinu, and gave it a Pasuk. But the idea was there from Moshe. Now you understand where we're headed with this. If the Rambam says that anything that comes from Moshe that isn't overt from Moshe is not one of the Taryag Mitzvos, so then obviously the Rambam isn't going to count anything that's not overt in the Torah as part of the Taryag. Whereas the Ramban is going to say, wait, just like things derived from the Yud Gimel Midos can be part of the Taryag, so too other things that come on tradition from Moshe, where Chazal say we have this on tradition, but the Nevi'im gave it a Pasuk, that's also going to be biblical, that's also going to be Doraisa. And the Ramban says, even the Rambam got stuck when the Rambam had to deal with the idea that you need witnesses to testify orally, and you can't have them write their testimony. And the Rambam then says, okay, but we have a concept that we do accept testimony from a shtar if you walk into courts with a contract. So we respect the contract. Allah respects the contract, even though the witnesses aren't around. So then the Rambam says, yeah, okay, so how do I deal with that? That's a special rabbinic institution. Shalotin odeles bifnei lovin. Because Chazal said, if you're going to insist that you always have to bring in the witnesses, well, you're not always going to have them accessible. You guys with me so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So if I make a contract with you, I take a loan, and I take 2 witnesses. Now, today they're in Kochav Yaakov. Go find them 3 years down the road when I have to pay you back. If you have to take me to court, you're not going to want to go fishing around to find your witnesses. If you can't rely on your contract, if you're going to have to bring the witnesses into court to testify orally, well, then you're never going to want to give a loan. So Chazal said, who's going to be the loser at the end of the day? The people who need loans. No one's going to want to give them a loan. So along came Chazal and made an institution that you can use the shtar. So that's how the Rambam explains that. And the Ramban says, but the Rambam himself wrote that the whole idea of kiyum shtarot, that you could validate a document by bringing witnesses who say that's their signature, I recognize it, that's all midrabanon for the rabbinic institution. What does the Rambam do with the Gemara? The Gemara says in Kiddushin that the witness's signature is based on the pasuk. The pasuk in Jeremiah says, "Sadot b'chesef yiknu, v'chatov b'sefer v'chatom." V'ededim. So the Rambam says, no problem. It's a pasuk in Jeremiah, a pasuk in prophets, a pasuk in Yirmiyahu is going to be drabanan. So far, the Rambam seems to be okay. But, says the Ramban, there have been many responses written against him. Anyone who learns Talmud knows that the Rambam's shita doesn't work. Why? Because if a woman brings out a get before us, so this woman is a married woman, right? Let's take Sprinza Hershkowitz. She's married to Menachem Hershkowitz. Fine. Sprinza is married to Menachem. Biblically, there's an Isser Yehorig Val Yavar. Sprinza walks into the court one day and pulls out a divorce contract. She has a get. And then she can validate that get with witnesses. The courts are going to permit her to marry someone else. So how could the Rambam say, Kiyum shtaros midrabanon? What does that mean? We trust the testimony that's written in the get, biblically, in biblical cases. If they were biblically married, like all couples are, and now she wants to marry someone else, so that's a very serious prohibition. Yehorig Val Yavar, that's arayus. But we permit it based on the document. If we can validate the signatures, we permit it. So you see, we give biblical weight to the validation of a document based on the signatures. How could the Rambam say, it's only rabbinic? It's not. It has biblical applications.
Biblical applications, but it doesn't make it biblical.
How could it not be biblical? You're matir nashis ish. She's married biblically. How are you letting her go marry someone else?
The consequences, the legal consequences, and the ins and outs, and not every detail can be described as a mitzvah of the
Torah. Oh, Mr. Kramer, you're saying something fantastic. You
are.
Let me back what he's saying on two levels. Meaning, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that we have biblical responsibility to give testimony if we know testimony. And let's say a person is a rabbinic gambler, meaning what he does isn't considered gambling biblically. It's called gambling rabbinically. Meaning there are certain types of gambling that the rabbi said that's called thievery rabbinically. That's called gambling rabbinically. We have a sad example for that now. Stock market is a good question. The assumption is that there are certain deals you enter that you never thought you'd lose. If you really thought you'd lose, you wouldn't enter them. And so therefore, sometimes you enter into a scenario where if you take the money because the other guy gambled, well, that can be biblical thievery, that could be rabbinic thievery, that could be rabbinic gambling, which is rabbinic thievery. So the Talmud says, if you have a biblical mitzvah to give testimony, and the rabbis disqualify you rabbinically for rabbinic gambling, how does that work, right? So the Talmud gives us the idea you're saying, that sometimes you could have a rabbinic ruling which disqualifies the guy biblically. You're right. There can be such a thing, because the Torah says we should only accept testimony from who we trust. And being that the rabbis made an institution and he went against the institution, we don't trust him anymore. So I don't trust him biblically because of his rabbinic transgression, right? So there can be an overlap there. You're right. Sometimes we do say that. Even though you'll say, but biblically he has a mitzvah to testify. No, because we, the courts, will not accept him biblically because he transgresses rabbinically. You with me?
Yeah.
But that's a technicality. Over here, what are you going to say? The get has to be a kosher get. Without a get, she's an HSE. She's a married woman. I'm saying there can be instances where what you're saying is 100% true, but here, you're permitting her to get remarried. Biblically, if she's still married, if biblically you don't accept the get, without the witnesses being present, like the Rambam says, that you don't trust signatures biblically, that that's only a rabbinic institution, so how do you ever let her get remarried with a get? So this isn't the Ramban's attack. This is really the Ramban quoting. He says, you know, others have gone out against the Rambam for this. And he quotes, the Gemara says in Gittin, that we make the witnesses sign, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, for the smooth running of society. And then the Gemara asks, how could you tell me it's for the smooth running of society? It's a biblical concept. And we learned this inside, you remember? We learned this Gemara inside the Gemara in Gittin. So then the Gemara says, yeah, it goes with Rabbi Elazar's opinion. So you see, the Gemara calls the concept of validating signatures a biblical concept. What did we say earlier? The pasuk for it was from where? Who remembers? What pasuk did we have for the idea of signatures? Yirmiyahu. The pasuk's in Yirmiyahu. The Rambam says anything that stems from a pasuk in prophets is going to be rabbinic. But here the Gemara in Gittin calls it biblical. Yeah. No, that the Gemara over there quotes the pasuk, right? Yeah. And then the Ramban hits a knockout punch. The Ramban says, and that which the Gemara said, kiyum shtarot rabbanan, when the Gemara said validation of documents based on signatures is only rabbinic, that's the exact opposite of what the Rambam said. Meaning, technically, biblically, we should trust this document without validating their signatures. If I walk into court and I have good kosher signatures, so that we should have trusted it without anything biblically, the exact opposite from the Rambam. The Rabbanan came along and made a stringency and they said, we want to validate their signature in order to accept the shtar. Not like the Rambam says that, no, really you shouldn't trust the shtar altogether. It's a rabbinic institution to trust the shtar to begin with. The exact opposite, says the Ramban. And that's where we left off, right? That's the last thing we learned. As many as you want. Not yet. That's one of the hardships of learning this, that you keep hearing the Ramban's attacks, and we don't always have time to go into how does the Rambam defend himself. So sometimes we spend time explaining what the Rambam's defense would be, but now we should really get started. Long introduction. Umipnei ze amru, kevan dekiyum shtarot rabbanan himnu rabbanan bidrabbanan. So what does the Ramban do? The Gemara says, if the validation of documents is rabbinic, so there you could have situations where for rabbinic things, even someone who ordinarily shouldn't be trusted, the rabbis were willing to trust them for a rabbinic thing. What does that mean? That means that even without the rabbinic institution, I would have trusted the document without any validation. Now that we instituted this stringency that we have to validate the signature, so that's a rabbinic stringency, so then the rabbis can impose their own leniencies as well. Vani motze, you guys got it? Vani motze. I think it's the second line.
Yeah, top on the right side.
Vani motze, dinei nefashot, v'dinei knasot, beidut shebashtar. I'm going to show you how you could have a situation where you have dinei nefashot, cases of life and death, and dinei knasot, cases of biblical taxes, that all stem from the testimony of a document. Here's the story. Reuven shayalo evet knani. Reuven had a slave named Jack, okay? Ve'otzi Shimon shtal chatum shemacholo. Shimon comes along and says, I have a document, you sold Jack to me. Jack is my slave. Rishon eino bedin yomo yomaim, ela ne'erag alav. Now, we have a din in the Torah that if a person hits his slave and the slave dies, so then the master gets killed. He gets a death penalty. And then the Torah says, if yomo yomaim, if the slave walks around for a day or two and only afterwards dies, so we assume that maybe the master hit him and it wasn't mercilessly and he doesn't get the death penalty for it. We might do other things to him, but the death penalty he doesn't get for it. So now, if a stranger were to kill Jack, so then the stranger doesn't have that leniency that if it took him a day or two, we don't kill him. If his own master killed him, right? The master has a stringency and a leniency. If it's within the first day or two, the Torah is more stringent. If it's after the first day or two, the Torah is more lenient. If it's someone else, then it's like anyone that kills a slave. Now, Reuven claims the slave is mine. Shimon claims the slave is mine. You have a document here. If you're going to trust the document, the slave belongs to Shimon. So, Reuven eino bedin yomo yomaim. Reuven, if Reuven beats Jack, and Jack dies 3 days later, well then Reuven will get the death penalty for it, because there's no leniency. Whereas Shimon, even though Shimon might not be the legal owner, according to the Rambam, if Shimon only has a shtar, if Shimon doesn't have witnesses, he only has the signatures on a document, well then according to the Rambam, that shtar isn't biblical. So then how could Shimon be the master? You're giving him over to Shimon, and then you're going to kill Reuven, because you're going to say he doesn't belong to Reuven, right? If Reuven comes and hits Jack and says, you come to my house, you start working, grabs him, throws him down a cliff. Jack is stumbling off the cliff, and he lives for 2 days, and on the third day he dies. And just before Reuven throws him over the cliff, two witnesses come up to him and say, don't, you're going to get killed, it's an Issa Doraisa, you can get the death penalty. And he says, I don't care, good for nothing, Jack. Throws him over the cliff. Okay, on the third day Jack dies. Now, if Reuven owned Jack, so then he wouldn't get the death penalty for it. The Torah says, if the slave dies on the third day, Bezdin will punish him however they see fit, but the death penalty he doesn't get. If Reuven did not own Jack, so then Reuven killed Jack.
If he didn't own the slave, right? Let's say like someone completely unrelated to the whole situation came in and just killed Jack straight up, get the death penalty, you know, he's not the owner of
sure.
The slave.
That's what we're saying here. He would get the death penalty even if it took 3 days for Jack to die. Poor Jack, right? So the Ramban says, look, Rambam, you claim that this whole idea of validating a document based on signatures is rabbinic. What are you going to do in such a case? There's a biblical question here. Who does he get the death penalty or not? Also, I'll give you another case. Kidesh Uventa Isha. Reuven walks over to Shprinza and says, be married to me with this apple. So the apple has a shavet pruta, and now Shprinza is married to Reuven. Beidei chatima, sorry. No, he didn't do it with an apple. He wrote a document. And now the witnesses are gone. All he has is the document and their signatures that he wed Shprinza. Uba la Shimon, now she committed adultery with Shimon. But Shimon and she, they had a thing going. Shimon used to be married to Shprinza, and Shimon divorced Shprinza. Shprinza went and married Reuven, and 2 days later, Shimon commits adultery with his former wife. Now it's adultery, she's not his wife. Chatum be'edim. Now, how did Shimon divorce his wife? With a document signed. How did Reuven marry her? With a document signed. In both these cases, if the witnesses aren't around, according to the Rambam, what are you going to do? You're still going to give them the death penalty. Now, we could answer the Ramban. This is, to my mind, this is a very weak claim. Because there are two questions here. And so the Ramban here is obviously telling us a stronger claim than it seems on the surface. One is the question of the action happening, meaning the marriage happening. The second is the court's validating it. Meaning, sometimes you have scenarios where you know and I know. Let's take a case like this. I have kosher meat on the table. And Avi and Malachi decide to gang up on me. So they take me to court. And they say, we know that meat's not kosher. And if he eats it, he deserves malchus. And I say, go fly a kite. I know my meat is kosher. And I'm even going to take a bite. So the courts hear their testimony, and the courts say, don't you dare, we're going to give you lashes if you do. And I say, but it's kosher, and I take a bite. Are the courts going to give me lashes? Yes. Did I do anything wrong? No. So there are two questions. There are always two questions. One is the question, what are the facts? And the other is the question, what is the law? The law doesn't always reflect the facts. Now, when the Rambam discussed the validation of a document before the courts, That's a totally different question than the validation of the document per se. Meaning, if he wants to be Mekadesh, or if he wants to engage her with a document, the Rambam never said that that doesn't work. The Rambam said when it comes to court, if you want to validate what happened, so then the validation in court has to be based on witnesses' testimony. And if you're going to do it based on a signature without testimony, then that's not biblical. You guys with me? That's the question. That is the question.
Because I think that the original process is to have at least two witnesses. Or else, you never know. Maybe he signed the paper alone, by his hand, and say that I have two witnesses.
So that's why we validate their signature. The question is, after we validated their signature, this document that's been validated, does it have biblical status or rabbinic status? And I'm saying there's another point we have to think about. When we ask, does it have biblical or rabbinic status, all the Rambam said is that as far as the courts are concerned, it's being validated rabbinically. But that doesn't mean that the original document didn't have biblical power. Those are two different questions. Avi, are you with me?
Sometimes.
I'm not sure if anyone's with me here anymore.
No, I'm with you, but it's a little hard because it's late, you know.
We brought coffee.
I forgot to bring milk.
I have milk.
It's stronger than
milk.
That's why I
have milk. Aha. Tom? So what's the difference between milk, the validation of the document for court and not for not court?
Question number one. If I want to engage my wife, I write a document and I sign it with witnesses and I'm a kadesher. Is that biblical? That's one question. Question number two is when I come to court and I show them that document and the court trusts that document, is that biblical? Now, whether the court trusts that document is a separate question than the question of, was my kiddushin biblical? Meaning the Ramban glosses them over. The Ramban says, just like you, Rambam, claim that the validation in court is only rabbinic, it only has rabbinic weight, well then so too the kiddushin should only be rabbinic. Who said? Those are two different questions. I'm saying the Rambam could easily answer. No, I didn't say there's no Kiddushin d'oraisa with a shtar. The Rambam holds there's Kiddushin d'oraisa with a shtar. The Rambam holds there's a get d'oraisa with a shtar. The Ramban says if the validation is only rabbinic, then the action should be only rabbinic. Who said? So then we have to go back to the Ramban and understand why the Ramban felt that the Rambam couldn't answer that, because the Ramban also knew what I'm saying.
Just to clarify, a shtar is a contract, right?
Correct.
What did we learn from Yirmiyahu? We learned only that the signatures are being validated. That's his whole point, is that you can validate signatures.
Yes, because Yirmiyahu told them there's going to be an exile, so make sure to get good signatures on your documents so that you will have proof in the future of the lands you purchased. Because you're going to come back to Israel, but it's going to take time. So make sure to have good documents, have good documentation that you'll be able to validate down the road. So from Yirmiyahu, we saw that you can have testimony based on the signatures in a document, and it will have biblical weight. And at this point, we're out of time. We have to clean up. Maariv's in 5 minutes. To be continued in 2 weeks, I hope.